Hey, everybody, it's Pastor Brian Ross from Grace Life Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We want to welcome you once again to this midweek video. We appreciate you tuning in as always. If you haven't already done so, if you would consider subscribing and ringing the alarm bell as a way of staying current with the ministry here on YouTube, we would certainly appreciate that and would love having you be a part of our regular audience. In this video, I'm also again working in conjunction with Columbus Bible Church and Pastor David Reed. And the reason I am doing that is because we are once again going to be talking about and addressing a question related to our recently co-authored and released book, The Myth of Verbatim Identicality, How God Actually Preserved His Word. You can order this book direct from the publisher, Dispensational Publishing House, and I will leave a link in the description to this video for where you can do that. Also want to tell you that both the Columbus Bible Church YouTube page, as well as the Grace Life Bible Church YouTube page, have a playlist here called The Myth of Verbatim Identicality. And we are adding to this as questions come in related to the book. And so far what we have in this playlist, and let me just take the opportunity to reorder that, is the presentation that was given on the book in April in Chicago at the Grace School of Bible Pastors Conference, where copies of the book were passed out to the pastors, and I gave a talk or a presentation related to the contents of the book. It was not extensive. It did not cover everything that was covered in the book, but it was definitely a good start. And then last week, we added to the playlist with a second video related to printer's errors and the question of, are he and she equivalent in Ruth, verbally equivalent in Ruth 3:15? So we are going to be adding to this playlist and addressing another question related to the book in this video. So Dave and I have worked together to prepare a script for this video. And so I'm going to be working my way through the script and talking about the question that came in related to Psalm 24, verse 3. So this is what we are looking at. Are the words and or, so there's a little bit of a mouthful there. Are the words and or verbally equivalent in Psalm 24:3? And again, Dave and I worked together to prepare this script, so I'm going to take you through this information here in this video. And you should look for this video also on the Columbus Bible Church page if you are interested in doing that. So let's begin by talking about the textual issue in question here. Okay. So here is Psalm 24:3 in the 1611. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, and who shall stand in his holy place? Now notice, and who shall stand in his holy place? Here is the standard 1769 reading of Psalm 24:3. And who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, or who shall stand in his holy place? So you can see here the difference between and or. Okay. So at first blush, it might seem that these different renderings have different meanings for the simple reason that and or have different meanings. Okay. So and means both things at the same time. I ate an apple and an orange. Okay. Or it could be a sequential thing, right? So and can mean both things at the same time or sequentially, and or means one or the other, but not both. So it would seem and or would mean different things between a 1611 and a 1769. So what we're going to be looking at in this video is, can an argument be made that these are verbally equivalent? And remember, the reason we are doing this is because critics of the pro-King James position will say that you have to choose which edition of the King James Version is the inerrant one, the one that is correct, to the exclusion of others. So things like and or here are going to be points in that argument, right? So what we want to do is we want to address that, all right? So generally, as a matter should say of, sorry for the typo there, let me change it. As a matter of formal logic, the words and or are understood to mean two different things. So generally speaking, that's the case, right? Consider the following screenshots from Noah Webster's American Dictionary of the English Language for the conjunctions and or. So here's the and screenshot. It's a conjunction. Notice and is a conjunction, connective, or conjoining word. It signifies that a word as part of a sentence is to be added to what precedes. Thus, give me an apple and an orange. That is, give me an apple, add, or give, in addition to that, an orange. John and Peter and James rode to New York. That is, John rode to New York, add, or further, Peter rode to New York, add, James rode to New York. All right, so the conjunction and is connective. It's conjoining words, and it's signifying that a word or part of a sentence is added to what precedes it. And then it gives these examples here in the dictionary, okay? And that's the way most people would understand the use of the conjunction and. So now let's look at or. So we're looking at the conjunction form, right? It seems that or is a mere contraction of other. So it says a connective that marks an alternative, all right? So this would be disjunctive, right? It would mark an alternative. You may read or may write. That is, you may do one of the things at your pleasure, but not both. So you're either going to read or you're going to write. That's the general idea of or, right? So if you're going to choose to read, then you cannot also choose to write. That is the idea, right? You can do one or the other, but not both. It corresponds to either, okay? You may either ride to London or to Windsor. It often connects a series of words or prepositions presenting a choice of either. Okay? He may study law or medicine or divinity, or he may enter into a trade. All right? So the purpose of this video then is to explore the question, are the 1611 and the 1769 editions of the King James Bible verbally equivalent in Psalm 24:3? And again, we're looking at that question because of the change in from and to or. The 1611 had and, the 1769 changes it to or. Okay, so that is why we are looking at this question. So again, are the 1611 and 1769 editions of the King James Bible verbally equivalent in Psalm 24:3? So in order to accomplish this purpose, we're going to consider the following points. The first point we want to look at is the translational history of Psalm 24:3 in the English Bible. So that's going to be the first thing we look at, okay? Then we're going to look at the Bible's use of conjunctions with questions and explore that issue as we look at some biblical examples here, and then we're going to offer a conclusion based on what we see in the translational history as well as how we observe conjunctions working with questions in the biblical text, okay? So let's get into the first point, which is the translational history. So we can start looking at this with the first complete English Bible, the Coverdale Bible, okay? And this was the first complete Bible printed on a printing press, and we can see what the reading was for Psalm 24:3. So here's Coverdale, okay? Notice, who shall go up into the hill of the Lord, or who shall remain in his holy place? Okay, so we've made this a little bit easier to read here. Who shall go into the hill of the Lord, or who shall remain in his holy place? So notice the reading is or in 1535. Okay, let's look now at the Matthew's Bible from 1537. Who shall go up into the hill of the Lord, or who shall remain in his holy place? So again, the reading here is or who shall remain in his holy place. Let's look at the Great Bible from 1539. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, or who shall rise up in his holy place? Okay, so who shall ascend to the hill of the Lord, or? So again, the reading is or. So Coverdale, excuse me, Matthews, and Great all have or so far. Now let's look at the Geneva. Who shall ascend into the mountain of the Lord, and who shall stand in his holy place? Now notice that the Geneva has and, not or. So we can see that right here, okay? So the first three we looked at, Coverdale, Matthew's, Great Bible, all have or. Then the Geneva Bible reads and, all right? You can see that right there with the bold and the screenshot from the 1560 Geneva Bible. Let's look at the first iteration of the Bishop's Bible. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, or who shall rise up in his holy place? So the 1568 Bishops has or, okay? The 1602 Bishops, which is the base text for the King James Bible. Remember that the King's printer, Robert Barker, printed 40 unbound copies of a 1602 Bishop's Bible and distributed them to the various translational companies as they commenced work on this project, right? So notice, here's the 1602 Bishops, which is the base text for the King James. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, or who shall rise up in his holy place? So again, the reading here is or, not and. So far what we've seen is all of the pre-1611 English Bibles that we've looked at, with the exception of the Geneva Bible, have said or, not and. The Geneva Bible stands alone so far in its reading of and. Now we can look at a 1602 Bishop's Bible that is in the possession of the Bodleian Library and look at the handwritten notations of the King James translators as they go about their work, okay? So rule one said to follow the Bishop's Bible unless the truth of the original said otherwise. So here we have a 1602 Bishop's Bible with the handwritten notations of the translators as they go about their work of revising the 1602 bishops into what would become the 1611 King James. So notice what we have here. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? And then we have an addition, okay? Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? So we have an addition of the, or who shall, notice that rise up they've stricken through rise up, and they've substituted it for stand in the holy place. Okay, so here's the reading as it stands in Bod 1602, which is a primary source work in progress document. Who shall ascend into the hill? Notice the insertion of the Lord, or they retain the or reading, or who shall stand instead of rise up in his holy place. So let's make sure we understand what's going on here. Bod 1602 records two revisions to the bishop's text of 1602. All right. The is inserted into the phrase, who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? Okay. And then stand replaces rise up. So again, we can see both of those changes, the insertion of the here, and rise up is stricken through with substituted for stand. All right. But notice that or is left unchanged in Bod 1602. So there's no change recorded to or in this document. All right. So when the translators go through the work, the stages of changes that are recorded in Bod do not signify a change to the or conjunction here. All right. They leave it alone as it stands in Bod. Now we can look at the 1611, okay, and we can see that it says, who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, okay, and who shall stand in his holy place. So notice that now we have a change from or in Bod 1602 and the 1602 bishops to and in the King James Bible, okay. So who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord and who shall stand in his holy place? The 1611 accepts the two revisions noted in Bod 1602 above. The is inserted into the phrase, and who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? So the 1611 accepts the insertion of the word the here into this clause, like we saw up here in the previous example, all right? And they also accept into the 1611 stand instead of rise up. So here we see who shall stand in his holy place, okay? And we can see that that was changed here. Rise up was stricken through and stand was substituted. So the 1611 is accepting the change, the insertion of the into the first clause and the replacement of rise up to stand in the second clause, okay? Now, the 1611 records an additional revision not noted in Bod 1602. And is exchanged for or. All right, now notice that Bod did not record a change here, or who shall, but the 1611 record is changing it to and who shall. So I want to stop here and just make a point then. Then that means that BOD is not representative of a final product. There are revisions that are made post BOD in the process by the King James translators. BOD does not record a change here of or to and, but yet the 1611 makes that change. You can see that very plainly when you look at the screenshots from the primary documents. Okay, so the 1611 records an additional revision not noted in BOD 1602 and is exchanged for or. Now, I want you to remember, though, please note that this is the same as the Geneva reading. The and reading became the standard King James reading until Blaney's revision in 1769. So once the 1611 adopts and instead of or, that now is going to become the standard reading for the next 158 years. Okay, so let's look at a 1629 Cambridge. Okay, who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord and who shall stand in his holy place? So notice it's and in 1629. Let's look at a 1638 Cambridge. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord and who shall stand in his holy place? Notice that it is still and. Then we can look at the 1672 Paris edition, edited by Paris. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord and who shall stand in his holy place? So all the way through the 1600s, into the early half of the 1700s, the reading is and who shall stand in his holy place. And then we get to Blaney's edition of 1769 and notice what happens. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord or who shall stand in his holy place? So now all of a sudden in 1769, we have a change from and to or. Okay. So the 1769 edition of the AV changed the and in Psalm 24:3 to read or after 158 years of the text reading and in this verse. Now look, folks, let's back up. This is objective. I've showed you in screenshots from the primary documents themselves, from all the pertinent relevant editions of the King James, that this is a textual fact that this occurred. So we have to, as King James defenders, we have to adopt a position that is in line with the textual facts. Okay? That seems to me to be absolutely essential as we think through these issues. So in the 1769 edition of the AV changed and in Psalm 24:3 to read or after 150 years of the text reading and in this verse. Now, two questions are going to arise then from this textual fact. Number one, is this change the correction of a printer's error or an editorial change made by Blaney? Now, if you're going to say it's a printer's error, that means you're going to have to say that it went unnoticed as a printer's error for 158 years. And was spelled correctly the entire time. There is nothing obvious in the and reading that it's a printer's error, okay? And the secondly, we need to address the question of are and or verbally equivalent, okay? So let's deal with the printer's error issue first. It is not logical to classify Blaney's change in 1769 as a printer's error for the following reasons. Number one, there is no obvious error attributed to the compositor of the 1611 and all subsequent editions of the AV prior to 1769. Now, in the prior video, the video on Ruth 315, he, she, and Ruth 315, we gave you the definition of a printer's error. A printer's error is an error of the compositor, right, as they lay out the text. So there's no obvious error attributed to the compositor of the 1611 and all subsequent editions of the AV prior to 1769. So there's nothing in the prior editions. So for example, when you look at the 1611, there is nothing obvious that says and is a printer error. There is nothing obvious in 1629 that and is a printer error. 1638 that and is a printer error. 1672 that and was a printer error. So why? So you cannot say that Blaney is changing that in 1769 because of a printer error. Okay? So and is spelled correctly and was replaced as the standard reading. Sorry, let me start over. And is spelled correctly and was accepted as the standard reading for 158 years. Despite all prior English Bibles reading or in Psalm 24:3. So I went over that evidence with you earlier in the video. Generations of English speakers received the AV's historic and reading in Psalm 24:3 without objection for a century and a half. So no one screaming printer error with the and reading. Therefore, the most natural conclusion is to view Blaney's change from and to or as a stylistic change on the part of the editor rather than as the correction of a printer's error. That is the most natural reading and understanding of the documentary evidence that we've gone through in point one of this video. It is not a printer error. It is a stylistic change on the part of Blaney 150 years after the AV text was first published in 1611. There's nothing obvious that it's a printer error, and was accepted as the correct reading for 158 years, despite all prior English Bibles reading or with the exception of the Geneva in that verse. Okay, so let's get into point number two then, which is the Bible's use of conjunctions with questions. So to answer the second question identified above, whether the words and or are verbally equivalent as they are used in Psalm 24:3, we need to consider a couple of relevant points. Okay, first, we need to note the grammatical structure of Psalm 24:3. The verse is comprised of two questions in parallel structure. So here's Psalm 24:3. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, or who shall stand in his holy place? So you'll notice that or is the conjunction, and that on the front side and the back side of the conjunction, you have questions. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, or who shall stand in his holy place? So both questions posed by Psalm 24:3 on either side of the conjunction or are substantively the same, i.e., who is going to occupy the Lord's position? So the force and the sense of both of these questions is the same. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? Who shall stand in his holy place? Both of them, both of the questions are ways of they're substantively the same, right? They're fundamentally asking the question, who is going to occupy the Lord's position? That's essentially what both questions on either side of the conjunction or are driving at, all right? Now, and I think there's a typo here. This should say, nope, it's not. Psalm 24:4 provides the answer to both parallel questions posed in verse 3. There are not two different answers, but the single same answer to both questions. What is the answer? Psalm 24:4, who he that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully. Okay, so let's understand. So what is the answer to the first question? Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? He that hath, the next verse, verse 4, he that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully. What's the answer to the second question? Who shall stand in the holy place? Verse 4, he that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully. So you have two questions in verse 3, worded slightly differently, conjoined with the conjunction or, that have the same answer in the next verse, in Psalm 24, verse 4. Okay? Now let's look at another example. Psalm 15, verse 1 has a similar dual question structure in which the same question is being asked in two different verbally equivalent ways. So here is Psalm 51. Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? Note that Psalm 15:2 does not provide two different answers to the two questions, but the same answer, thus demonstrating that the two questions in Psalm 15:1 are the same question. So here's the next verse. Verse 2, Psalm 15:2. He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart. So who shall abide in thy holy tabernacle? Verse 2. He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart. who shall dwell in thy holy hill, he that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart. So the point here is that, sorry, I have a fly that is pestering the video, so excuse me for that. So the point here is you have two questions in parallel structure that have the same answer in the next verse. The same as what we see in Psalm 24, verses 3, and then in verse 4, like I've already demonstrated. Okay. So in Job 38:3, God demands that Job answer multiple questions that God is about to ask. So here's the verse, 38:3. Gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me. So then beginning in Job 38:4 and continuing through Job 40:2, God puts forth multiple questions to Job using the words and or, like the example we are looking at in Psalm 24:3. Consider the following examples. Job 38:5. Who hath laid the measures thereof, if thou knowest, or who hath stretched the line upon it? 38:21. Knowest thou it, because thou wast then born, or because the number of thy days is great? Job 38:28. Hath the rain a father, or who hath begotten the drops of dew? Job 38:29. Now watch. Out of whose womb came the ice and the hoary frost of heaven? Who hath gendered it? Okay. Verse 31. Canst thou abide the sweet influences of Pleiades, or loose the bands of Orion? And then verse 36. Who hath put wisdom in the inward parts, or who hath given understanding to the heart? Okay, so notice you have a series of questions that are posed to Job. God demands that Job gird up his loins and answer them, and then he poses a series of questions. Many of these are the same structure. There are questions on either side of a conjunction. Sometimes the conjunction is or, sometimes the conjunction is and, as you work your way through Job 38. All right, so in all of these examples, the questions on both sides of the conjunctions are asking the same substantive question, whether and or is used as the conjunction. So when you look at the structure of all of these, you have, again, a question, a conjunction, and a question. Sometimes it's or, sometimes it's and, but the questions are essentially asking the same thing, all right? They're asking the same substantive question, whether and or is used in the conjunction. So when God used or, God was not suggesting that Job pick which one of the connected questions to answer. God's not saying answer this one or answer this one. That's not the structure of the questioning. Rather, it is plain in Job 38 that God demands that Job answer all of his questions. And we saw that again up here in verse 3. Gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me. So it's not like Job can say, yeah, I'll answer this one, but not this one. That's not the function of or and in these examples, right? So rather, it is plain in Job 38 that God demands that Job answer all of his questions. Thus, in the context, whether the questions are connected by and or, there is no substantive difference in meaning, okay? Irrespective of which coordinating conjunction is used, God is demanding that Job address all of the questions posed in Job 38 through 40. Job is not capable of answering any of the Lord's questions, and we can see that in Job 40 verses 1 through 5. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall he that contendeth with the Almighty instruct him? He that reproveth God, let him answer it. Verse 3. Then Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand upon my mouth. Once I have spoken, but I will not answer. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no further. So Job is not able to answer any of the Lord's questions that are posed to him in Job 38 through 40. Okay. So the usage of or to connect two things that mean the same thing is a recognized usage of the word. The Oxford English Dictionary entry for the conjunction or records a meaning that indicates that the word, talking about the word or, can be used to connect two words denoting the same thing. So here is entry 4A. Connecting two words denoting the same thing equals otherwise called, that is corresponding. So there is acknowledgement from reputable English language resources that the word or can connect two words denoting the same thing. And that would be the exact structure that we're observing when we look at these examples that we've presented in this video. Okay? Going a step further, legal draftsmen have recognized that while and or typically have different meanings, the words can be used in a way to express the same thing. The St. John's Law Review, Volume 80, Fall 2006, Number 4, contains an article authored by Kenneth A. Adams and Alan S. Kay titled, Revisiting the Ambiguity of And or in Legal Drafting. In this article, Adams and Kay conclude the following, quote, although and expresses conjunction and or expresses disjunction, they can serve to convey the same meaning. So depending on the context, depending on how the words are being used, the Oxford English Dictionary and these legal draftsmen are identifying that and or can mean the same thing depending on how they're being used in a given context. So let's look now at the conclusion. Psalm 24:3, the revision from and to or that occurred in 1769 cannot be the correction of a printer's error since and was the accepted English reading for over 150 years. Rather, the change is clearly an editorial decision. And note again that the change that Blaney makes in 1769 would be supported by Coverdale, Matthews, Great, and Bishop's Bibles. Okay? The and reading that was in the 1611, all the way from 1611 to 1769, was a Genevan reading. Okay? So, but this is the decision to make the change in 1769 is not the correction of a printer error and had been the accepted English reading for over 150 years. So the only thing seems to me logically that one is left to conclude is that it's an editorial decision on the part of Blaney to make the change in 1769. Okay. Now, this presents the question of whether the revision represents a change in meaning. It is evident that the revision does not introduce a change in meaning for the following reasons. Number one, the two questions connected in Psalm 24:3 are verbally equivalent. Number two, the scripture uses and or interchangeably to connect verbally equivalent questions, as we've demonstrated in this video. Number three, it is recognized by secular sources that the words and or can be utilized in such a way that they have the same meaning. We've showed that in the Oxford English Dictionary. We've showed that from citing some legal sources. Therefore, the revision from and to or in Psalm 24:3 in 1769 is verbally equivalent and does not constitute a change in meaning. So they are verbally equivalent without possessing verbatim identicality, which is once again exactly the position that we are arguing for in our book, The Myth of Verbatim Identicality, How God Actually Preserved His Word. So on the surface, it would appear that Psalm 24:3, it is not a printer's error, it's an editorial change. The change is a non-substantive change because and or can mean the same thing given the variety of contexts. We've showed a multiplicity of examples here in this particular video, and hopefully you have found the video to be beneficial and helpful as you think through some of these issues. If you've liked this video, please leave a comment, like it, share this video in social media. Anything you could do to help get the word out about this topic would be certainly appreciated by both Grace Life Bible Church and Columbus Bible Church. And before I go, the most important decision that you'll ever make in your entire life is related to your eternal salvation. God loves you. Christ died for your sin. He was buried. He rose again the third day, the victor over sin and death. God is ready, willing, and able to give every person, every man, woman, and child, young or old, regardless of race, sex, age, anything, eternal life is a free gift. Okay? All you have to do is stop relying on your works, your performance, your law giving, your tithing, your church going, whatever it is that you're relying and trusting in that is adding to the work of the Lord Jesus Christ. Stop relying on those things and just trust and rely exclusively on what Jesus Christ did for you, his substitutionary atonement, the fact that he died for your sin and rose again. Trust Jesus Christ today before it's everlasting too late. Thanks for your attention, and we'll see you next time.